the first woman to be elected of the Wisconsin State Senate, State Senator Mary Lozick of New Berlin, represents the 28th District. She decided not to seek re-election this year, so I'm so grateful that the senator's come in for an exit interview. Senator, thank you so very much.
And thank you, Steve, for inviting me.
I appreciate that. Why, you were first elected to the Assembly in 1992, you moved to the Senate in 98. Why did you choose not to seek re-election on the 28th?
Oh, it's time. It's just time. The pages turn. My husband's retired. We'd like to do some traveling. And we've had lots of opportunities in the last 2 years, friends inviting us for travel that we haven't been able to go because I would be on the floor. So that, and Steve, we've gone to too many funerals the last 5 years. So a combination of those things, it's time and enjoy a little life before I'm too feeble to travel and do things.
What are you going to most miss about the Capitol, Senator?
Oh, I'm going to miss a lot of things, just so much. I mean, it was a very difficult decision. There's a big part of me that really would like to stay, that's going to miss a lot of things. And I think I have a few more terms in me, but I will miss the people. Mm-hmm. I will miss the politics. I will miss the decision making. Wisconsin's a great state, and I think of all the turmoil, especially the last 10 years.
Yes.
I think it's made it better. I leave it a better state.
Well, as I said, you were elected to the Assembly in 1992. You moved to the Senate in 98. Biggest change in how that branch of government functions since 1993 up to 2016. Biggest changes?
Biggest change is technology. When I came in, it was still telephone and hard copy on everything, paper. Then came technology, then came massive communications. You know, it's a two-edged sword. So mm-hmm. It was great because communication was much quicker. Mm-hmm. Individuals could email, and once email caught on, yeah. Oh my goodness, there were days it was 500 emails a day of people that, you know, want communication, want interaction. And when I served on the Finance Committee, that's when it really picked up. That's when email came alive and communication came alive. And in the old days, one would write a letter, you'd do some research, you'd write a letter, it would go back snail mail, and you'd wait for a reply. It doesn't work that way on email. It is just instantaneously back at you. So technology is the biggest change.
Does that make it harder to serve in either the Senate or the Assembly, technology?
Well, again, it's a two-edged sword. It makes it harder because you have so much communication, and I particularly really like staying in contact with constituents and really wanted to know what they're saying. But it's very overwhelming and physically exhausting mm-hmm. to try to keep up with that. And pretty soon you realize it's impossible, and you have to pick and choose. You have to rely on staff more. And I didn't like that part when I felt like I was losing some of that communication, because in the old day you could handle it all. But when the volume becomes so deep and so heavy, and then Act 10, oh my gosh, you're looking at thousands of emails a day, you just, you know, it's what do we do now? How do we keep up? And it's not possible.
I want to get to Act 10 in a little bit, but I want to come back to what you just said. The impact of social media on the process in the Capitol, bad or good?
Both. You know, it's great
that
there's
communication. Did you have to designate a staffer to deal with your social media presence?
Oh yes. I mean, you just can't keep up with the responsibilities. The there's a certain amount of commute, and just so many communications. And you try to, at least the phone calls, you do want to return a phone call, mm-hmm. and as quickly as possible, or within 24 hours. And just all of that communication became so impossible. So what do you do? Do you do phone calls? Do you do emails? Do you do social media? And you have to somehow make some decisions and move forward and do what you can. But social media was just something that you have to draw lines at certain places.
Yes.
And what can I do? And you can't keep up.
So I haven't had a chance to check. So are you on Facebook and do you tweet and Instagram?
No.
And all that?
No.
Okay.
No. I did Twitter, I think, probably for a couple days, and it was just, you know, it's too much. So no, I'm not. I said in retirement I'm going to get savvy with that when my grandson told me Facebook's for old people. Where's the world going?
And your grandson then, how does he do social media? Everything else?
All kinds of new technologies out there that I'm going to learn from him.
Okay. That's great. Well, looking over your career, it'll be 24 years when you leave the Senate officially on January 3rd. Is it harder or easier for a woman to get elected to either the Senate or the Assembly than it was when you were first elected in 1992?
Oh, harder or easier? I think it depends on, it really depends on the person. You know, how much do they want it? How hard do they want to work? I think that's what it all boils down to, what kind of relationships they've built, what's their resume, what's their history. I think it's easier for men, given the traditional family unit and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. In that sense, it's certainly, I think, easier for them.
Do you think we'll see a woman elected governor anytime soon?
Well, I think it's possible. But again, it's who's going to run and what's their positions, what's it all about.
Is the ledge of 2016 a lot more partisan than when you joined it in 1993?
No.
No?
No.
It isn't,
not
huh?
at all. No. I think the public is more participatory than back in the, you know, when I came in 19, well, I was elected in 92, came in January of 93. And because communication and technology was so much different than it is today, it's just, you know, it's just a different world in that sense.
Have you thought about a legacy? 24 years in January, what are you proudest of, achievements?
There are so many things that I worked on over those years, Steve, and it's ironic how things go full circle. What goes around just keeps coming around. Okay. When I came in, the biggest, hottest issue was the transportation budget.
Oh, really?
And the gas tax. That was, when I came in 93, there were 13 freshmen. It was Dave Prosser and Dave Dininger. And they made the wonderful decision to, because the Capitol was being renovated, to mm-hmm. stick us all over in Hamilton together.
Yes.
So you had 13 people, and a lot of them women. There were a lot of women that came in that year that we were just going to come in and change the world. So we went over into Hamilton, and there we were, the 13 of us together, and had nothing to do but just complain about the leadership. And back then, you had to fight to get a stapler. It was really different, really, really different.
So the biggest
back then.
Issue in that session was transportation funding. So it's come full circle, as you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you could wave a wand and solve our transportation funding issue, how would you do it? You're leaving office. Yeah.
I think that we have, there's a lot of money we spend on transportation. I don't think we're short of money in the state for transportation. There's a boatload of transportation money out there. I think that everyone, the two houses of the legislature, the governor, have to come together and identify the needs, not necessarily the wants. I once said that in order to, you gotta buy a road to get a road, meaning that you have to satisfy the interests of the state. Mm-hmm. So Southeast Wisconsin, where I'm at, that's where the roads are, that's where the potholes are, that's where most of the expense is. But yet you have rural legislators that believe, you know, they want roads too. They
yes.
want their, they want to take their bacon
their
home too.
And small
yes.
cities and villages.
So I always
Excuse
say
me.
You got to buy a road to get a road, and that just doubles the cost. So I think if minds could prevail that would come to the table and strictly do the rehab and repair, make mm-hmm. that number one, mm-hmm. and then new road construction, that's really got to be thought out. You know, Tommy did 2020,
yes.
the
quarters
backbone.
2020.
Yes, and he really built that legislature, and they really built a good backbone. We have a wonderful backbone system. We have wonderful roads. Some of the other states don't have near the roads that we have.
Iowa has gravel secondary roads. Yes, excuse me.
When yes.
You drive down then and you see the dust storm, excuse me.
That's, you're absolutely right, Steve. And many other states too that don't near have the roads we do. So we have a good backbone, a good spine, if you will, of roads, and they're in fairly good condition. So I think keeping them in good condition, if the legislature is very mindful of that, don't let them deteriorate so that you have to build a new one. That's most important. And then beyond that, we have a lot of money. We can still build roads. We can. And they're needed in some places where there's the high traffic volume. And I am from Southeast Wisconsin, so I harp about that a lot. That's where the traffic counts
yes.
are the highest. That's where there's the most gridlock. That's where all of the transportation going to the northern communities. You know, you've got the plover potato, you've got to move out. You've got all of our goods and services that have to get transported to other states. So you know, those types of things have to happen.
So if you were still in your caucus, would you argue against raising the gas tax or the
yes.
license plate renewal fee?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There is plenty of money out there if they just prioritize it. And another thing, I told the auditor when they do transportation audits, you know, look where law enforcement spends their time with radar and monitoring traffic. That tells you where the traffic is. We have built some big, beautiful new roads where law enforcement doesn't waste their time because there's no traffic there. There's not business for them to write tickets. And I said, I think that's very telling. Where have we built roads? And let's learn from that where they maybe weren't as necessary as they are in some other parts of the state.
But if you don't, under the Wisconsin Department of Transportation's budget proposal, the north-south leg of the Zoo Freeway doesn't get finished for decades. Are you satisfied as somebody who comes from Metro Milwaukee?
No, no. That's where the traffic is, Steve, and that's where the problems are. There's gridlock there, there's rush hour, there's accidents, those roads, you know, and you need lanes. We've always had the big fight over you can't have lanes because some felt that there should be mass transit. And mass transit, I've looked and looked and looked at that. Because if it were smart, if it were efficient, I think we'd all be on board. But people don't use it. It's so very costly. And the economy changes. The jobs are here, and then they're over there, and then they're downtown, and then they're in the suburbs. And that's very, very mobile. So the transportation system needs to respond to that and be mobile with that. And lanes, you need lanes to get people into the city, out of the city, there. You know, lanes of traffic are what's important.
One of the things that has been a central part of your campaigns and themes is anti-abortion. Why have you chosen to make that a centerpiece of your legacy?
I think that the way we deal with society, the way we deal with the life issue, says a lot about us. If we look at the good book, the Bible, it's about how do we care for widows and orphans, that's how we're going to be judged. So when I think, I take the taking of life is a very, very, very serious issue. It's something you can't reverse. It's something I don't think you can, I think you can be forgiven, of course. God is full of forgiveness. But I think that that's a pretty hard course to walk. And particularly for me, very personally, I believe it's the gravest of sins. And so for me to somehow tolerate that or some such would just be so serious to my eternal well-being that it's an issue I'm very passionate about, feel very strongly about. And in my next chapter, I will still look to be very involved with that in a very compassionate way to be helpful to it.
What about those very difficult decisions involving rape, incest, life of the mother, Senator?
Well, I think when you take a life, you take a life, and there isn't a good way to justify or excuse it. It was very, very difficult this last, it wasn't difficult for me, but it was difficult for me to understand individuals that felt there was more compassion and more health care delivered when a baby's life would be taken for a number of reasons. And some disabilities, you know, if a child had Down syndrome or if a child was somehow blemished in the eyes of the abortionist or the eyes of some, that the child was somehow blemished and shouldn't live. Mm-hmm. That was so difficult for me to comprehend. And well, I don't comprehend that. I don't see how one disposes of a life for whatever reason, be it something, you know, a very, very grave disability, to whatever the reason might be. And I've, too, because of my interest in this issue, I've come across so many women that have had abortions and regret it and seek forgiveness. And I do believe they're forgiven. They're truly remorseful, and I do believe that they're forgiven for that. But for us as a society or as a government to promote it, I think really puts women in a lot of danger, a lot of harm's way, and we should be promoting a healthy society, a good society.
Well, with President Trump, President-elect Trump, who takes office on January 20th, saying he will appoint a conservative justice to the Supreme Court, do you think Roe versus Wade, which came down in the 1970s, will be overturned, Senator?
Oh, I think eventually it will be. I definitely think that, because the younger generation, we find less abortion and we find less tolerance for abortion. I see that pendulum swinging that way. And the younger generation, they're going to be the elected leaders as well as the electorate determining those things. And I think Donald Trump is very, very keen in terms of how he got elected, what his positions were, what he believes in. So yes, I think that will happen. Will it happen tomorrow or will it happen many years from now? Mm-hmm. That remains to be seen.
If Roe versus Wade is overturned by this a new majority of the Supreme Court, then our law making it a felony to perform an abortion would then kick in. Do I have that right?
I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now let's talk about Act 10. What memory do you have most vivid of Act 10?
Most vivid, I believe, is we had a safe room up in the Senate. We all had to go to the safe room at certain points. And standing in the safe room and looking out those very large windows, floor-to-ceiling windows, and seeing the crowds, that memory is there. The memory of navigating into Madison, then navigating, once you get to Madison, navigating from there into the Capitol.
Because you had to come, you had to park under the Risser building, and then did you
well,
have
there
to
were
come
a
through
variety.
The tunnel?
They changed our mode of entrance almost daily.
Oh,
you would call on the way in and find out, what are we doing today? So some of that was kind of interesting and humorous as I look back. The day we all came in a prison bus, that was kind of entertaining. And then the day I came in individually with a trooper, and I'll never forget sitting in that trooper's car, and I'm sitting there, and the trooper's next to me. And these guys are big, and this guy was massive, and I'm sitting there looking at him, and just the distance from his shoulder to his elbow, and I'm admiring how much distance there is there. And I'm thinking about other people seeing us on the street, and me being a bit smaller in stature.
Yes.
They must think it's take your daughter to work day or something. So those things, and sometimes getting out and getting in, where it was pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, were there moments when you were truly afraid coming to work in the Wisconsin State Senate?
When I look back, I certainly should have been, but at the time, you know, we have legislators have a very busy lifestyle, so you know what's in that office, and you know what you have to do, and you know your string of phone calls and your string of emails, and you know what people are disgruntled about right now, and your wheels are always turning for solutions and how you're going to vote and how you're going to deal with this and how you're going to influence your colleagues to vote or not vote or some such. So those things are always, there's always many, many things on the mind of a legislator.
Okay.
So at the time, your mission is, I have to get from point A to point B.
Yes.
To do that.
Right.
So at the time, I didn't think about it quite as much, but there were days when, you know, I tried very hard to be incognito, trying to get out of the building because people were so passionate. And we had a system that, like I say, changed daily. But for me, I would navigate to the door. There would always be, you know, troopers and law enforcement around, and not right on you, but subtly making sure that you navigated okay. And then I always had one that went out the door in front of me, and I waited like 60 seconds. And if he didn't come back, then I could go out.
Okay.
The most difficult one was the night we signed it, and we were all taken down into the tunnels and over to Risser. And that was a very interesting evening, one that I will never forget.
Because that was the day of the conference committee.
Yes.
And then the vote. Senate vote.
Yes.
And then the Capitol filled up as word got out through social media.
Yes.
Yes. That was.
And I can remember going down the steps and hearing people scream and protesting, and that, you know, I didn't look up. I remember seeing all the shoes as I'd go down the steps. My head was not up in the camera. It was just, and after my family said, "Where were you? Where were you?" And I said, "I was there. I'm kind of small in stature to begin with." Mm-hmm. And then it was easy for me to hide behind some of those really big male senators. But I remember seeing the feet. I remember hearing people holler. I remember some people trying to reach across where they had like a ribbon or some such to give us some pathway. And then getting over to Risser, and then somehow people knew we were over there, and it was dark at night outside, but they were clawing on the windows. And for the moment, it's kind of still life, and you feel like it's the aliens trying to get you inside the building. So we'd turn out the lights, go to another room, And then a lot of them left on the bus because earlier in the day they moved the cars. But for some reason, Dan Kopenke and I, they couldn't move our cars. So our cars were sitting back here at the Capitol and they couldn't get them out. So the troopers were talking about what they were going to do with us and how they were going to get us out. So they decided to bring us back through the tunnels up through where the portico is and put us in a squad and get us out of there. And another one, another person came in, one of these troopers, and I've never seen this either, these great big massive guys, white as a ghost, just white. I'd never seen anything like that. He was so white, and he said to another one, "You cannot take a squad through there. They will roll it over. They're taking the doors off the doorknobs. They're going in the windows." He's describing what's going on. So what are they going to do with Dan Kopenke and I? They got to get us out of town somehow. So, and I remember then they brought a unmarked down underneath some tunnel, and I don't know, somehow we roamed around and somehow got out, and then the troopers or plains clothes got our cars and brought us out, brought them out to the edge of Madison where we could get in, and then the action was all downtown. So once we were out East Wash a few yes. blocks, there wasn't anything going on and we could
But you heard
exit.
The troopers say there's no way you can do that because they will roll the vehicle over.
Oh yes, absolutely. So they said, "We'll just bring a squad up close to the portico, we'll put the two of them in the squad," right. and another one coming back white as a ghost, "You cannot go out there, you cannot bring a squad up, they will roll it." And that our lives, they said, "You cannot take them and try to put them even from the portico into a car and unmarked. You know, you can't do that. We've got to figure out something else." So we gave them our car keys, they moved our cars, and then they put us in a unmarked, and we came up out of this. I remember coming up out of a underground parking, and I remember there was a woman trooper sitting in the front, and she said, "Don't worry, they cannot see you in here," because they, I guess the bus, they had tried to rattle and roll the bus when they took that out because they knew the legislators were in there. So in the car we were in, they didn't know, it could have been some anyway. Businessman leaving work or
yes.
whatever.
So okay.
They can't see you, they don't know you're in here, you're okay. And I remember Dan Kopenke grabbing my hand and just squeezing like, "Oh, Mary, this is..." But we got out.
Since 2011, Governor Walker and legislators such as yourself have passed more than 40 major policy changes. Do you think Act 10 was the most important change? They include photo ID, you know, right to work, other major changes. Was Act 10 the most significant and most important of the last 6 years?
It was the first. Was it the most significant, most important? I would say no. I would say all of them were very equally important. I think that the voter ID, I was very involved with that because I chaired elections. So the whole redistricting issues, the voter ID issues, all of those things, the John Doe, all of those types of things, I was very involved in, having chaired the elections committee at the time. So all of those issues I was, you know, obviously well-versed on, and decision-making and those types of things. And the Act 10, of course, that. And I think about Act 10, how I reflect back in the day. Scott Walker and I carpooled years ago. And when they say things about Scott that he, you know, did or didn't do what he said, I remember talking about all those things years ago. I remember when I came into the legislature, Dan Varakis back in the day was my mentor and seatmate. And when I think back, we talked about that all the time. And I remember that first year, Dan Varakis and I did a, because I was fresh out of local government and fresh out of listening to school boards and listening to city, town, village officials tell me how awful it was. They couldn't hire people. They couldn't fire people, that they were so hamstrung, and it was all the state's fault. The state just tied up their hands, and they were just meaningless nobodies. They couldn't administrate a government. So I remember, and Dan came from local also, and his dad was a mayor. And so we kind of had common interest and common things. So we talked about all those things. We drafted a bill. And I remember back in the day when we drafted a bill that was probably pretty much Act 10 and thought, you know, we'll get some things. And me being the naive freshman, I thought, oh, we just have to draft this, make sure we don't make mistakes, you know, look out for everybody. And, you know, we're going to do this next Tuesday. It don't work that way.
not at all.
So yeah, the issues, you know, kind of stayed the same. But in terms of that, you know, all of those issues I think were equally important because the public, the electorate, and where we are today versus where we were then. I think people have more freedoms. I think people are more participatory in their government. I think people are more aware. And that's, to me, that's a very good thing. People should be very participatory and knowledgeable, and they certainly are in Wisconsin. I mean, how many years back, say 92 when I came in, did anyone know the governor's name, legislator's name, or know really what government was or where it was? Yeah, I think that's in Madison. And how people would say, what do you do in all the states? Oh, do you go to Washington very often? Well, now people are much more informed.
Mm-hmm. What is your political takeaway from the election of President Trump, both who won Wisconsin, first time a Republican in 32 years, and then nationally? What lessons did you learn from Mr. Trump's victories?
I think what is most meaningful, I remember election morning getting up, and of course I was a Donald Trump fan pretty much from the beginning, and definitely when I went to the convention and heard him speak, I was very enamored with him. So when I got up in the morning and I was hearing the projections, I just thought, that's not going to be a good day. And usually election night, my husband and I, we enjoy going out to different election events, and there were different things going on, and we were invited to different places. And I said to him about 7, I said, I think I just want to go to bed tonight. I just don't think. So I'm sitting there, I've got Channel 4 on in Milwaukee, I've got my laptop on Fox, I got my iPhones on, and I'm just speechless. About 10 o'clock, I says, I think we need to go out. It was just so remarkable. But in terms of the public across the country, I think what's so telling is how I don't think there was anyone that forecasted he was going to win, and that just wasn't going to happen. But I think how this participatory government and how this technology and how social media and how aware people are and how people were just saying, we've had our government for how many years, and we've had the government, the status quo in Washington, putting us more and more in debt and bigger government. And I think Donald Trump was just saying all the things that many people were thinking across the country. And I think they just went out and voted. And a lot of new people and it's amazing that he's this wealthy, wealthy person, but people of very modest means voting for him.
How have you answered Democrats who says he's potentially a very, very dangerous president, who may act first and then think later? And you've heard Democrats say that. How have you responded?
I don't think that's going to happen at all. I think he's surrounding himself with very smart people. I think that Reince Priebus being at his right hand, Reince is very measured. And I think that surrounding himself with these people that will be good decision makers, people that a lot of experience. I think he's putting people in place that have a lot of knowledge in a specific area. I don't think he's trying to put together something that's politically correct. The Donald is doing the Donald. He's putting people in place that can do the job. And I don't think he will be afraid to fire somebody that isn't doing the job. There'll always be the shuffle.
When he calls the news media corrupt, is that a fair characterization?
I think he's probably exaggerating a bit.
Okay.
I think he feels that the media has maybe corrupted the public in a bit of a figurative sense, that the media has gotten to the point where they're controlling too much of the thought of people. And that's, I always say, look at a lot of different media, whether you're a liberal or conservative. Look at all the media out there and hear. They're all talking about the same issue, but they're all saying it a little bit differently. And to see those points of view and to see how, at the beginning of this whole Trump and the media squabble, sometimes I thought that there were media folks that just wanted to get their name in the same sentence as Donald Trump, that kind of put them out there and gave them a sense of importance. And I think there was a lot of that going on. And I think that the way now that he talks directly to the public, and people are finding that a bit, particularly the government elitist in the status quo that feel everything should be very measured and the public should have this sense of information at a certain level. I think that he defies that, and I think that that's good.
What about the comment that talk radio in the Milwaukee area has too much influence, Senator? Does it really set the agenda? Has it set the agenda?
I don't think so. No. I think that they can really, I don't think they're setting it at all, but I think that they are communicating the megaphone of the people, of their audience, and they can take an issue and drive it, and they are talk radio. So there's a big section of it that is entertainment value and a big section of it that isn't factual, isn't quite, you know, I'll hear the story from talk radio, and then I'll know what's going on in Madison. Eh, it's a little bit different.
Are you still mad at Charlie Sykes because he's part, he never gave up his never Trump stance?
He's retiring, live and let live. I don't have any animosity towards anyone. Everybody had a job to do, and everybody did it, and everybody did it a little bit differently. You know, but at the end of the day, I think with the culmination of everything, the talk radio, both conservative, liberal, the legislature, the governor, the compilation of everything, at the end of the day, I think it's better for the people. And sometimes I was on an end of that I didn't like and wasn't accurate. But at the end of the day, the whole robust conversation is very important to our society, to our democracy, to our government.
Let's end with two questions quickly. If a woman graduating from college came to you and said, "Senator, should I enter politics?" What advice would you give her?
First, I would ask, do you want to enter politics, and why do you want to enter, and what is your resume, and what do you want to accomplish? And, you know, a person has to decide that, and if they're of the liking and the ilk that they want to do that, I think they should pursue it vigorously.
Okay.
But it's not for everyone. It is not for everyone.
And then the second and final question, what advice do you have for your successor, Representative Craig, who becomes Senator Craig on January 3rd?
Oh, listen to the people. Listen to the people. Work hard, which I know he will. But to me, it was always, what are the constituents saying? That always came first to me. Constituent work always. It was interesting. Driving up here today, I had a gentleman call me and need some help with I always said the health, safety, welfare type of issues in my office with all the communications. We're getting 500 to thousands of communications a day. Those health, safety, welfare, you got to weed them out and deal with them. And I always took that seriously in helping people. And like I say, just today I get that. That always stays with you. So I think listen to the people, because they're the ones you're representing. They're the smart people. They know it all. The customer is always right. And I would always tell my staff that sometimes when they would get frustrated with what they would call the frequent flyers in the office, and some being very nasty and some just calling because, you know, sometimes they're lonely, so you get these types of frequent flyers. But I would always tell them, and they would come in and say somebody wanted some ridiculous thing that I couldn't do or this or that, and I would always remind them, the constituent is always right. The constituent is always right.
On that note, thank you. Senate President Mary Lozick leaves office on January 3rd. She's represented the 28th Senate District. She was the first woman to be Senate President. Senator, thank you so much for talking to Wisconsin I, and good luck
thank
in
you,
your
Steve.
Travels. And
thank you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.